Welcome to Podcast on Fire 132, Milky Way Treasures Intruder, part 2 of our Milky Way Treasures series. And what I enjoy about this series so far, this is the second, and what I enjoy about the plans about the series as well is that it comes from my personal favorite time in Milky Way Images history, the early days, but I also enjoy the fact that most of the movies covered doesn't have Johnny Toe officially anyway as director. Later on there is that rumor about Longest Night that and Expect the Unexpected that Johnny Toe ghost directed parts of them or most of them, and in terms of Longest Night I can see that quite clearly. Expect the Unexpected, maybe here and there.
Jingle Maw ghost directed Longest Night, didn't he?
Fuck. Oh, I'm in a conflicted place now.
Oh no.
No, stop it.
Happy Ken's gone.
Abort. But Milky Way clearly was set up though to give talents a chance, which means that Jingle Ma didn't get a chance to direct at Milky Way, obviously. And to breed talents, yes, bitch. And tonight the turn has come to a talent that they try to, you know, maybe a breakthrough, but this talent only directed one movie, and tonight the turn has come therefore to Tsang Kang-jung and his only time in the director's chair. Otherwise this is a writer, but boy did he give us his all in terms of darkness, and boy did he give us something unexpected based on what we knew of him looking at the credits. But that's my favorite persons, when they give us something completely different compared to their regular job in the industry, if you would. So therefore, set your senses category 3. It's time for Tsang Kang-jung's Intruder. And I'm Kenny B, and the person you heard a little while ago is, of course, Tom KW, so say hi.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guy. All right. You all right, Tom?
Yep, good, mate. Good.
Good, good, good. Okay, and we'll get into the regular network updates and last movies watched for a slight while in a bit before we go on into the main discussion of Intruder. So, this is Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. Hit us up at the website, podcastonfire.com. You can find all the shows on there, including the Anchor Show that you're listening to. And give us some feedback. podcastonfire@googlemail.com is the email. You used to be able to give us feedback on the forum. We've now closed that due to spam bots, the iPad bots and the lottery bots that didn't do shit for me. I had my hopes up, but still waiting. But anyway, that they're not on the forum anymore, but the forum is there, all cleaned up, podcastonfire.com/forum. So it's an archive of old posts from Tom KW when he was, so to say, merely a listener. And Tom enjoyed the members-only archive that we put up almost every episode of. We had exclusive outtakes in there, exclusive content, but we've now moved all the exclusive content into the bonus episode section. So whenever we have something that we feel didn't fit into the show, but is worthy of being an extra episode, a longer discussion, an extra 20-30 minutes or so, we include that in the bonus episodes section in the on the website. And those are podcasts that are not available on iTunes or Stitcher, only exclusively on podcastonfire.com. We have two Facebook endeavors, the page that you can like, facebook.com/POF network. But we also have the main discussion going on in the discussion group that you can reach by typing in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search bar. Request to be added and you're essentially in, and join the discussion that way. Including recently, what the hell did we discuss recently? Oh, Wang Yu in Wuxia, and the merits of Wang Yu on screen versus his off screen antics, and the off screen antics that he was kind of a prick. It's documented that Wang Yu was pretty much difficult to work with, and a diva, and
James Bond thinks so.
The Man from Hong Kong crew were very vocal about it. I don't know if George Lazenby himself has said anything, but
he's got a file saying he's a stinky prick. honestly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well he's not the first. Obviously, Brian Trenchard Smith was very vocal about it in the documentary that they made. That Osploitation documentary, I think, there are some sound bites about Wang Yu, but also that the movie is kick ass. And it is.
Yeah.
Which means that Wang Yu still has, you can't separate the man off and on.
He just seemed like a very strong-headed guy who liked control, and obviously you're gonna clash on the set of someone with the same vision.
Yep, that is certainly not the first time that has happened.
Yeah, of course.
So there's a discussion of Wang Yu in Wuxia. So I haven't seen that yet, but still looking good, and apparently still can command the screen whenever he does appear nowadays, which is not often. Has pretty much retired, I think. Okay, and we also have our Twitter account, of course. Follow us and Stu and his viewing habits. twitter.com/podcastonfire. And I do my writing and video reviewing on SoGoodReviews.com and SleazyKVideo.com. And the latest review to be put up was this past Sunday. And it was for a Taiwanese movie. That's part of the mix that I provide. And the movie was Devil Returns by Richard Chen, who directed Girl with a Gun, a.k.a. the Miss 45 rip-off remake that that Taiwanese cinema produced. And that movie will cover, actually, on Taiwan Noir in the future. But Devil Returns is a different beast, although it does channel known horror movies from the West, despite not being a remake, because it has strong elements of Rosemary's Baby, Omen, and Halloween. And while I enjoy the parts that channel Halloween, in particular one, not the rest of the series, but in particular one, the like techniques of John Carpenter that you saw in the first movie, it was a bit too much for the movie. They were a bit too happy to include classical movies all in one, you know what I mean? Because it made the movie kind of unclear. But the elements are cool. If you extract the parts that are clearly patterned after Halloween, they did a pretty good job. And Richard Chen has proves that he can, like Chu Yanping, can kind of take things that and copy them almost beat by beat, but still make them very bearable. And that's an art, I think, to copy something, to rip something off and have people say it's a rip-off, but kind of say it was still cool, rather than saying we're annoyed and that director should be shot or whatever. Like many people think of Chu Yanping, but that's their opinion.
Well, I simply think you should just stab him.
Okay. You wouldn't like our Fantasy Mission Force commentary when we do that, then where we hail Chu Yanping, the master Chu Yanping. I mean, he is a master, so screw you. Okay, and I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/SoGoodReviews, talking of all that nonsense. And the entire network is on iTunes, of course. You can subscribe to all the podcasts via iTunes. Leave us a comment and rating if you like the show. And you can also stream us via Stitcher. Stitcher.com is where you'll download the application to your computer and go to your nearest app store to download the free application to your tablet or smartphone, including the iPhone. So just type in, once you're in Stitcher, Podcast on Fire Network, and each show can be added individually to your favorites, and hopefully all are your favorites. And over at vcinemashow.com, of course, Tom KW does occasional reviews, latest at the time of recording, being Little Big Soldier.
Yep.
And so far, not released in the West as Jackie Chan's Little Big Soldier with an added gun in his hand or whatever. So far, no. But you never know.
Even though it's a period piece, black t-shirt.
They released Project A, for fuck's sake. It didn't look much like a period piece on the cover of that many years ago.
Oh, that was just a close face-up, I think. So he's still wearing a black t-shirt, but you just couldn't see it.
True. But the Samu image was from Martial Law.
Yes.
Yeah, it was his grey streak, with the grey streak in his hair, but whatever.
Lovely.
That's in the past right now. So, network updates. Just a minor stuff about what's going on, because we are planning behind the scenes for several shows. Translation work has been done for minor bios on key characters connected to the next Taiwan Noir, and because basic bios are not easy to find for certain of these players and crew. So I've gotten help from Sylvia Roram, one of the hosts of Two Fisted Podcast, to do some translation so we can provide a little bit of context for the next Taiwan Noir. This week in Sleaze, the next recording of it, will focus on the plight of immigrants for the next Tidy Whitey Theater of This Week in Sleaze. We will do Girls from China and China Dolls. Both, you know, semi-serious, semi-goofy movies. And Girls from China, of course, was retitled in the UK in a brilliant move, because Girls from China doesn't sound hard and exploitation-y enough. So, of course, Eastern Heroes retitled that movie to Horse from China.
Bitches from Chinatown.
And you know what? It would have been like logical if that title came out of Hong Kong as well, because it was not like Hong Kong were prude about titles and stuff like that. But so yeah, I think it's a genius move, actually, in a shameless way.
Oh, it's sellable, you know.
Yeah, it's a title only. You know, young Tom KW might have seen that title on the VHS shop. Like, I want Horse from China.
Young Tom KW definitely saw the artwork at some point and was definitely enticed, but never
bang!
Seen it.
Bang! You told the story of your first 18 movie. Was it in fact was your first attempt buying an 18 movie or one of these category 3 movies?
My first attempt was...
It was still hard boiled though.
Yeah, it was hard.
I was thinking like the fifth attempt that was successful, possibly hard-boiled. The other four attempts were for these Category 3 movies.
Second attempt, Basic Instinct.
So, yeah, and China Dolls, by the way, that stars Amy Yip. It's a, you know, it has some goofy stuff. I remember Charlie Cho was in it, having his... Maybe it was the pimp, in actuality. It's been years since I've seen it, but he had... the girls in cages, and but they were not like cages in a small apartment or anything. It seemed like he had an entire arena or a large room, you know, a large operation kind of. So I remember, you know, that Charlie Cho scene stood out, and it might as well been quite menacing too, which is rare for Charlie. But I'm saying I don't remember really that, therefore I'm looking forward to revisiting China Dolls. But it starts Lam Ching-ying as a cop, I believe, or someone who helped the immigrant that Amy Yip plays. So, like, sympathizes with her. So, it's not a bow-chicka-bow role for Lam Ching-ying or anything like that. It wasn't that desperate in 1992, or whenever that movie was made, and 91, 92, 93.
He was still good with the vampires.
Yeah. I mean, he appeared in at least one Category 3 rated hopping vampire movie or horror movie, but that was more due to a sex scene. The movie was Wizard's Curse, which like opens with a Billy Chow sex scene, and I think that was pretty much enough to push it into the free, but otherwise it plays out as familiar stuff. So but that's what we're doing next. Director series is shaping up to be a swell mix, the next recording, that is, a swell mix of tits, gore, and therefore we reached, of course, Erotic Ghost Story and Story of Ricky, both directed by Nam Nai Choi. And Erotic Ghost Story is the kind of movie where it's not a, you know, superb classic or anything, but it came before Sex and Zen. It has kind of been forgotten because Sex and Zen was so great and, you know, floored everyone and is still, you know, reference material. So Erotic Ghost Story kind of was left behind, but it's not unfair. At the same time, I'd like to highlight it more, you know, to bring it out and for people to realize this all came from the Seventh Curse director, the Story of Ricky director, Herb Engels director, you know. So it'll be fun to revisit that because the ending is clearly a homage ripoff of The Witches of Eastwick. And a pretty damn good one, an effects ending too, which makes it a very Nam Nai Choi. So that'll be fun. That's the Amy Yip movie where, you know, the term the Yip tease. You've heard the term Yip tease, yeah, Tom?
No, I don't listen to This Week in Sleaze. That filthy,
well,
filthy
you're,
show.
You're on the internet at least daily, therefore you must encounter the term Yip tease.
No, I don't have a sort of dirtying up my iPod. All my ears. They're dirty enough.
Well, you try and make yourself seem more great than politically correct. I'm going to try and bring you down to the level that you actually enjoy being
Amy
at. Yet.
Even Good. Though she's a teasing little minx. We all love Amy.
And the erotic ghost story is where you'll kind of develop a love-hate relationship for the stance she took at one point. That she didn't want to show her nipples, so they always design strategic shots. The ghost story is just filled with strategic, infuriating, fantastic shots as well.
Oh, pulling out my hair. Also, just if that all go, I haven't got a lot of hair. I'll be pulling out my pubes, everything, man. I'll go hardcore on this one. Honestly,
okay,
it calls for it.
But that'll be fun. Story of Ricky is a revisit, of course, and we'll be. We'll be talking a bit of the manga and anime, so I'll be screening at least one episode of the OVA for that one for some comparisons. Good fun. Much stuff is going on as you hear. And what's been released recently was this past Wednesday, like 2-3 days ago. We released the director's series, the one we recorded before Hong Kong Day went to Hong Kong on Nam Night Choice again. Manga adaptations, Peacock King and Saga of the Phoenix. A good old double bill of without spoiling, for you that haven't listened to it, without spoiling anything, let's just say there were different opinions in the room, different degree of, you know, is this essential Nam Night Choi or not type of opinions, but that's very healthy. It's not like it turned into a rumble or anything.
Yeah, well, I think our shows before, we kind of were all in the same ballpark, but I think with this one, we definitely have varying opinions on the quality and what we thought. So I think it made for our best show.
Yeah, it was good. It was
not trying to hype it up. You know, you might think it's terrible, but yeah. I think we did okay.
We did absolutely okay. I agree on that. It's good fun, and we provided as much perspective as we could, as much context as we could for you listening to appreciate.
Yep.
How, why this came out, and the era it came out, how it fits into the era and all of that, which is always our intentions, least. But expect talks also of Yuen Biu, how long he sat in a car once. expect discussions of, you remember that? expect discussions of stop motion creations in the movie with huge testicles, and the various other special effects stuff like the laser wars, you know, pew pew pew.
Lovely.
That's lovely. So and finally, as a tease, because we haven't formed this idea fully yet, but over at This Week in Sleaze, we might be bringing in some Japanese sleaze into the Tidy Whitey Theater soon. And I like that idea, because the Tidy Whitey Theater is open to different things, not just Hong Kong sleaze or Taiwan sleaze. So the great Lord Joshua Regal has suggested some Japanese classics, according to him, because I always enjoy when he talks of the Japanese movies, the Pinku movies that he or the Roman porno movies that he reviewed recently. The title's always so striking, you know, Rape Train. Or, you know, like Beaver Shot Girl or something like that. And it's still these like beautiful widescreen movies from the 60s and 70s and what have you, you know, sleazy as hell, but well made as hell. So they weren't grungy as such, a la Hong Kong cinema, in a way, you know. So I always like that contrast. So we'll see what happens there. It's being planned. And over at Last Movies Watch, I just have two brief ones. Tom,
Ken, before you jump into Last Movies Watch,
yes,
I'm gonna speak of just a brief bit of news which I found out today, which I managed to sleep on for the whole month. We finally got our first two Jackie Chan Blu-rays in the UK.
Oh.
And I'm talking the kind of classic stuff. CineAsia released a few bits and pieces, newer stuff, but we got Legend of the Drunken Master, which I do say because it is the Miramax cut, and it has been confirmed that it is only the English dub on the disc. And Rumble in the Bronx, we finally got uncut, but I say uncut as in it's the international print, but the international print was cut in the UK for violence. I think it was parts where Jackie was getting bottled.
Yes.
And that is now uncut in the UK, the international version. They were released this month. Yep, yeah, I think they released mid-July 12th or something like that. I was reading before. And yep, yeah, through, I think, Studio Canal.
I released.
So, yeah, so a bit of exciting news. I'll be looking forward to kind of sitting down with them both, either renting or I might purchase them. I'll probably just rent them and have a look at the quality of them. I've read a couple of the reviews saying that Rumble in the Bronx looks pretty good. Legend of Drunken Master might not be a massive leap from the DVD, but, yeah, we'll see. So,
yeah, I don't get, like, super pissed off talking of the editorial decisions for those two movies. It's just a shame that they never were released with options, though. Legend of the Drunken Master, I'm sure, will play fine if you listen to it with a dub, which is by Jackie is the cast member. I assume that
it's the only, obviously, I think it's the only of the only place you can hear Jackie's voice.
Yeah, so
in the English dub.
So it'll be fine. I think the music has changed, which is not to people's liking, but I think it'll play fine, and everyone can survive without that ending. I mean, I'm not like the biggest, like, must be uncut or else I will never ever think of another version of the movie. I'm not that kind of guy. But on the other hand, Rumble in the Bronx, the re-edit is actually great, because the uncut version is too long otherwise. But the problem is the dub is really annoying. especially of the kid in the wheelchair.
I mean, I think to be honest, the dub is more, the overall dub is more successful than Rumble the Bronx, even though I think some of the voice acting is a bit off, because I think they didn't, as far as I know, they didn't fuck with the sound effects, which is what they did with the Legend of Drunken Master version of Drunken Master 2, which was my main gripe with that film. But I'm looking forward to seeing it again and kind of just reassessing it.
Well, good if they turn up as Blu-ray rentals as well.
Yeah, so that's kind
there's
of
no
my
excuse
main.
Really to not pick them up. And I think they're both in that form good. Introduction type of
definitely,
movies.
Definitely. And just to quickly know as well, Drunken Master is actually, Legend of Drunken Master is actually streaming on Love Film, if you have that as well.
Right on.
Which I found out yesterday. So it's crazy to go from a time when it was completely unavailable to everyone in the UK, because this is the first time it's actually been released in the UK. It's the one Jackie Chan film that we've never ever had, so it's finally been released here on Blue, and it's actually streaming on Love Film as well. I don't know about Netflix, but it's extremely on Love Film. So Love Film, send me a few quid in the mail for that little plug there. You're listening. Enjoy.
Please.
Please. And poor.
But there's not, you know, you don't need to sit around to wait for an Ultimate Edition with subtitles and original language, in my opinion, because I think the right situation as it is right now, because it's in place, that means there's no, it's not going to happen really. So if you want to find the original language version, then I suggest like getting a Laserdisc player and picking up the Laserdisc from somewhere. I don't think it's being sold for outrageous amounts of money. It's just that it doesn't, maybe it doesn't necessarily pop up that often. It's fine. I've only seen the original version, but I'm sure if I watched the English version, it would be fine, because you would be taken by the visual awesomeness. In the case of Legend of Drunken Master and Rumble in the Bronx, I mean, I would gladly sit down in front of those. I would not be a sourpuss front it. Definitely not, because they are so awesome in every way conceivable.
Oh, agree.
So good, and I saw like there was a double bill blue release in the US of Twin Dragons and the Bup-a-da-bup-a-da-bup and Super Cop. So get those on blues as well. Or obviously the US re-edits, but still they're on Blu-ray, and hopefully they're sufficient and available for rental for our US audience if they'd like to check them out on blues. So.
By non-specific rental website.
Because I didn't do any research, I don't know, but I assume there are regular places that stream stuff. Maybe iTunes, maybe Netflix, who knows?
Blockbuster. I'm bringing it back. Bringing it back.
Anyway, the checks are coming in. The money is trickling in here. Yeah. Being buried in money, so because I need to do a show as well. We need to stop the plugin so the money will stop.
Of course,
It just stopped. Good. All right, dude. Some brief last movies watch from me.
You get on me last movies watch. I'll see you and smell my money.
I can just hear Cartman in my head, like, you know, Cans money, I'm bathing in Cans money, because he won a bet sometime. So, anyway.
Open the show.
I watched some Ridley Choi action that I had not seen before, and I was pleasantly surprised that it was a solid movie as well. I like Ridley, but I wasn't expecting a solid movie out of Final Target. And it's a solid thriller from both, you know, in terms of the story, but also from the action, or on the action level, and the painful stunts level, because true to tradition, as Ridley and a few of his stuntmen take a few bumps here, and not as insane as in No Regret, No Return, when Sam Wong rode a motorcycle and was hit by a car and somehow survived. It was structured in that way. I mean, I'm talking about it like it was an accident. No, they did that. Just get hit by a car. It's Ridley Choi's character hitting Sam Wong. That hurts. I mean, it's on the level of Pantyhose Hero in terms of, my God, they're ragdolls when they're hit that hard, you know, and you can't fake it.
Oh, you can't fake that.
So, I mean, watching Sam was perm in slow motion in Pantyhose Hero when he's hit by the car.
Boom.
Boom. You know, imagine in full speed. I don't know if they show that stunt in full speed in Pantyhose Hero. Do you remember that?
I think it's replayed at full speed. We'll have to ask Ian Davis. Get back to us.
Mm-hmm. Ridley's... as it turns out, when looking at Final Target, a decent little director. You know, it's a decent showcase for him as both lead, because he's the star, and director. While he doesn't have that No Regret, No Return style, ow, fucking ow, type of stunt work, but which movie has, you know? It's still admirable for the focus that it has. It doesn't dip into comedy. It focuses on a solid storyline about two down under luck brothers. They get into the triads. One is a capable brother, which is really choice character. Carol Wong plays the screw up, and he eventually turns on pretty much everyone in the movie, you know. That's not a spoiler as such. It's how the story is structured, you know. He doesn't get any praise, jealousy, therefore his evil side sets in, and Carol Wong as evil. He is a fantastic bad guy, Carol Wong, and I don't think many people know him, but he can be quite heinous, plain triads with you know, the typical 90s triad bling, but he still came off as heinous.
I'm looking at pictures of him now, and he has phenomenal eyebrows. Just to put that out there, real good.
Final Target, I recommend it. You know, get it if you can find it. It's one of those movies that they never reached. It never reached DVD, I think. I saw a Laserdisc of it, so that was mine.
Nice.
Finally, Lord Don, starring Alan Tang. Not Tam, but Tang. You know, what has he been in? Black Panther Warriors, he was in. Gun and Rose, Return Engagement, it was a star of that. But also many movies before as a romantic lead and a gangster lead. And it's a boring gangster movie with him and co-directed by him. And I only mentioned that because I was looking forward to it, because the duo of directors, which is him and Stanley Sui, they made a much better gangster movie subsequently, which I'm leaving behind Lord Don now is bullshit. But do seek out, if you can, a movie called Don't Kill Me, Brother, which had that age-old template of refugees turning into wealthy gangsters, and then it turns really, you know, dark and awesome and gory. I dug that. It had a very evil atmosphere, you know. you're used to gangster violence, of course, but it did, yeah. This one took it up. I really liked it. So team of Stanley and Alan, they could make some good stuff. He didn't co-direct Don't Kill Me Brother, but you know, Lord On was a spontaneous, sporadic watch. I had it on my pile here, and I'm probably going to revisit Don't Kill Me Brother at some point because I really dug it.
Nice.
Okay, since you didn't have anything, we are done with this little main warm-up before the main event, if you will. So yep. Let's listen to some music or audio from Intruder, and we'll be right back discussing the movie and a little bit of background about it. So sit tight, we'll be right back. Welcome back, and the Milky Way treasure, which might not be a Milky Way treasure, as we said during the first episode. They, you know, we might be looking at a dud as well. And in the case of Beyond Hypothermia, it was good and bad.
Yes.
So it's not a given that this series is, you know, superb classics or anything. So you'll hear our opinion of the Intruder shortly. Plot. Mainland year... Xiu Yan, played by Wu Qianlian, the star of Beyond Hypothermia, kills off the prostitute, Sichin Aye, a young woman, prostitute, as I said. She's befriended in the mainland in order to assume her identity to get into Hong Kong. When passed through customs, Ye, acting as a prostitute, obviously, picks up taxi driver Chen Qimin, played by Wayne Lai, for the night. He is divorced, lives on the outskirts of Hong Kong, and has family problems of his own, and it turns out he's the perfect victim, therefore, for her, as she begins a calculated terror in order to bring over she wants to bring over her husband Quan, played by Moses Chan, to Hong Kong. There is a plan in place that involves Chen Qimin, and if you watch the trailer, you'll actually find they spoil the actual full plan in the trailer. So don't watch the trailer before you watch Intruder, if you want to watch Intruder. So, as I said in the intro, this is directed by Tsang Kang-cheung, and it's not astonishing, but kind of remarkable and amusing that his background in writing connects more to comedy, but if you really look at it, his early writing career held darker material. He penned Nobody's Hero, that we did a commentary for. Yeah. That was his script. My Heart Is That Eternal Rose, Arrest the Restless, but most common collaborator from 1996, that is, was Stephen Chow, as he was part of the writing team on God of Cookery, King of Comedy, Shaolin Soccer, Kung Fu Hustle, and CJ7. But the thing is, we all have versatility in us. We have desires. Maybe we have demons in us, and creative persons, that is. And during 1997, the handover year, maybe the fear of what going back to the mainland might bring triggered something in Tsang. Maybe. I have a theory about that later on in my review, if there is a commentary here or not. Tsang penned a script for this Johnny Toe Wai Kafai production at Milky Way that I, after seeing it the first time, deemed one of the most unsettling Category 3 movies of all time, for me personally. It features a dark and daring, but for me, again, I won't speak for you, I won't speak for anyone, but a dark and daring but expectedly terrific Wu Qianlian performance, Jacqueline Wu, but also versatile workhorse Wayne Lai provided the finest performance of his I've ever seen. And the thing with Wayne, though, he worked a ton, especially at this time, you know, bit parts to supporting parts, and often he was very manic, but also dressed up, and could be dramatic, and it felt like a bio said on the Hong Kong Cinema View from the Brooklyn Bridge website, it felt like a chameleon. You didn't spot Wayne Lai like instantly, like, oh, is that the guy? He's so different. And it's hard to explain, you know. It doesn't mean that he took on a lot of makeup or anything, but he looks different in quite a number of movies and has very different mood settings, you know, from having blonde hair in terms of look in Billy Cheung's horror comedy Last Ghost Standing to playing a murderer in the true life crime movie Human Pork Chop. It's actually a movie. It was based on a murder where they stuffed the body parts in Hello Kitty dolls. That's how they found them.
With some applesauce. Tasty.
But they made two movies on that crime as well. That came out at the same time. The other one was There Is a Secret in My Soup, starring Michael Wong.
It's Pepper.
And one of the movies, but not Human Pork Chop, funnily enough, if I remember correctly, but so it must have been another movie. They pixelated out the Hello Kitty dolls because they found out that there were movies being made.
They were going to find out what they found out.
Yeah. But Wayne is really, you know, really unpleasant to watch in that one.
He's in films you probably wouldn't think he's in, that he might just kind of flash by or a bit part, and you think, oh, yeah, he's in that. And he's in stuff like, he's in Dog by Dog.
Really?
Yeah, he's in Dog by Dog. He's in...
Biozombie, I remember he was in, too.
Biozombie, he's in I Love Hong Kong, which was, I think it was a year ago, yeah, like Eric Tsang's I Love Hong Kong. He's got loads of bit parts. If you look at his filmography, he's from, you know, the late 80s till now, and he's still going strong. So he's one of those characters that you probably won't recognise until you start watching a lot of stuff and then start seeing his face.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I remember he was in No Problem 2, that Hong Kong Japanese co-production, playing a very exaggerated gangster role, but exaggerated in a kind of Japanese way too. So he was probably asked in a way to like channel as good as he could the exaggerated Japanese way of delivering stuff, even though he was playing a Hong Kong henchman, a trial henchman. So
yeah,
it was good fun. Very underrated actor in my opinion. He's in Where a Good Man Goes as well, the Patrick Yao directed another Milky Way movie that a lot of people doesn't know. He plays the closest triad henchman to Lao Ching Wan in that movie.
He's also in My Secret Private Virgin. Ooh.
And in The Three Lust Kateers. I'm not kidding. It's not my joke.
What?
The Three Lust Kateers, indeed.
Starring
Simon Loy and Frankie Gigi Lai and Christine. That's a nice poster.
Wow. Wow, that's a cluster I want to be part of. He's also in a film called Fuck Off, which is...
You would think, listeners, we're making shit up now, but we're not, actually.
I honestly thought, looking at it, it was... It said Face Off, and I was like, what? Nicolas Cage isn't in that?
All good fun, but okay. Intruder isn't good fun at all for anyone. And okay, we'll let you take us into the discussion first, Tom. So, Intruder, what did you think?
Real grim and depressing little tale with no winners, I think, including the viewer.
But a lot of sinners. A
lot of sinners and a lot of shinners, a lot of shin kicks and pinners as well, small penises.
Yes.
No, not those stuff, but yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I commend the film and got on board with the style and the darkness, but it kind of just left me a bit cold.
It's interesting. So, the spontaneous question I have for you, yeah. I think I know the answer, but I might as well ask as well. Are you receptive to movies that are kind of just relentlessly dark and offers up no hope for anyone or anything, or you can accept that type of experience as well?
I think I can accept those type of experiences with if there's like characters I can latch onto or something I can kind of latch onto. I think sometimes with films like that, it might be that there's nothing I can latch onto, so it's kind of like I'm seeing it, you know, just kind of on the surface without really delving into it and feeling a part of it and feeling kind of emotional connection to it, which is what I kind of felt with this film.
Alrighty. We'll stop right there and I'll at least give you my brief skinny first, if you will.
Yep.
It's still one of the few Category 3 movies post the huge Category 3 era. This was, again, made in 1997. It still makes my stomach turn. Not due to gore, necessarily. I mean, it's a gory movie. And this German DVD version we're watching is actually uncut as well. So we got some more close-up gore that was originally cut to make it a Category 3 rated movie. And, you know, coupled with the relentless evil of the Wu Qianlian character, and coupled with, in my mind, incredible atmosphere. I mean, the in-house cinematographer at Milky Way, Sheng Siu Kung, was shooting movies early on as well. He's still shooting movies for Johnny Toe, and that's cinematography that, you know, he gets playtime in terms of the cinematography. Cheng, he gets to play with splashes of color in the environments, for effect, obviously. And but it's not the visual ride that you're not taking out of the movie. And the performers on board with that heinous material, and it is really, for me, a Category 3 post Category 3 heyday classic, rather, that I'm incredibly happy Milky Way have on their resume, despite it being somewhat hidden away still. It's not what you connect to Milky Way, which I like. I mean, it's the company in its infancy, trying to find their way, and because of them trying to find their way, this happened. This is not their tack anymore. It's not their desired tack to necessarily give us this kind of movie.
We haven't had something like this for a while. And I say it is hidden away because I think it's part of this film company's output rather than, you know, another's. I'd come in so late in the game as well. It's quite surprising. It's from 1997, but, you know, being Cat 3. But just to touch upon the violence, it was a lot less nasty than I thought it was going to be in terms of blood and gore. But a lot of the violence, it was only hinted at, but the moments that are captured are quite brutal. Like, it's more kind of physicality in terms, you know, not a lot of blood and not a lot of kind of, you know, blood flying around, which is always, in my personal opinion, more effective when there's less kind of to see and it's more to go, oh, shit, you know, to hear you. There's a neck slit, which made me feel uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And a couple of other moments here and there, which kind of just make you kind of tense your butt cheeks together, like, oh, that's a bit, you know, that's a bit... You know, and they work, and I think that's why I can commend the film in that department, that it set up a real kind of fucking nasty, kind of, you know, grimy, just a kind of like a not nice kind of aura about it and a not nice situation that was going on. I commend it for that, and commend it for the violence and making you feel that kind of violence. It's conveyed very, very well. But the main problem with the film for me was... You might completely disagree, but just a lack of tension, and I don't know whether that's because the characters weren't fleshed out enough, or whether I just didn't bond with any characters, or whether the plot didn't hold enough weight. But for me, it was just there wasn't any tension there. When all these tense moments, like there's, and to put on paper, that they're amazing. Like, the scenes out in the rain, and characters are crawling, and, you know, characters trying to get away, and characters use methods that you wouldn't think the characters were going to use to kind of, you know, kind of do over the next character. But on paper, they sound, you know, your phenomenal ideas, but in terms of translating to screen, there wasn't any tension there for me. I didn't feel in that moment, which is strange, because they are, as I say, very, very kind of well-written scenes.
Yeah, I actually do... I won't argue against you, because I'm not that kind of guy, but I do feel myself completely opposite. I think that there's tons of tension here because of the technical expertise that is on the movie and how it's shot, and especially the colors, if you will. So I feel it works personally for me. I will certainly go into detail on that, unless you want me to take over for a while, or do you want to continue your notes?
Well, to jump in, yeah, I'm really interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back a little bit to the visual stuff here.
Yeah.
Because you can connect, you know, a Category 3 movie making a visual stand is something that I notice a lot, which I enjoy a lot. And a director like Billy Tang, the director of Dr. Lam, Red to Kill, Run and Kill, he made a visual stand in his movies. I mean, he did have the same cinematographer working for him, but Billy Tang truly... you're convinced of the three, four movies that truly was a visual thinker as well and collaborated well with his cinematographer, in that case Tony Mew, and Clarence Falk of Naked Killer, you know, really made a visual stand with Remains of a Woman, which is a movie I can connect, you know, if I were to compare Intruder to anything in terms of how intense it is visually and it's with its cinematography, I think I compare Remains of a Woman and Intruder. Maybe lame comparison, but still, I feel I get that sort of similar horror atmos in there, where they play with light a lot and play with thunder or play with lightning. And I do really like in Intruder that you quickly get a sense in the opening scene in the mainland that there is a danger here in Jacqueline Wu, that a deception is behind that stunning beauty. And you believe that there is evil behind that stunning beauty, especially when you see her acts later on. But it's not like they hired a gorgeous actress and it's not believable. For me, it is believable as she toys with the prostitutes, you know, sneaks up on her, checking that, you know, asking leading questions, you know, that does anyone know you're here? No, I'm all alone here. And therefore, you know, boom, messy strangulation. And we come back to what you were saying there. This strangulation is more uncut because you get inserts to you know, the neck turning a bit red. We don't get blood, but you know, obviously the neck turning a bit red as the strangulation as she strangles her harder.
Yeah.
And I love the messy nature of that murder and other murders in the film as well.
I agree on that point.
And I agree also that gore isn't always necessary. You know, an effect can be achieved, and I like that she is maybe very calculating, but necessarily not the perfect killer either, because it takes a bit to kill someone. You know, she decides to strangle her with I don't know. It looked like might as well have been like a plastic type of rope, something you put around a parcel or what have you. So
they look like what police would use on kind of juvenile kind of criminals instead of handcuffs.
Yes.
Which you see on CCTV cities and stuff like that. Programs of that nature.
Yeah.
I don't know from first hand.
But, you know, in terms of Jacqueline Wu, I mean, what do you think of her as a glue for the movie?
I thought she was definitely, well cast, and I think that her character kind of boring. I think that she's definitely given a bit more, as you hinted on. She's definitely kind of revealed and unraveled a bit to be not so confident and not so sure in the role, with other characters kind of appearing. She was good in a role. I just think a big problem is we don't understand her enough and her motives until kind of the end of the film. Like we're stuck with kind of a mystery man on the phone and kind of questioning where is leading and why. So for a large chunk of the film, we're kind of waiting for a payoff to strike, and then that doesn't come till much later on. And by this point, for me personally, I felt it was a little too late. Instead of tasty treats here and there in terms of narrative to keep us going, we're left to starve and then given a big meal, if you know what I mean. Like an hour in, we get some backstory, and from then I really was just waiting for what I knew was going to happen. Even though there was, I didn't know exactly how it was going to pan out, but in terms of the character interactions, you know, she kind of hinted in her dialogue, and rather than being on the edge of my seat, excited to see what came next, which is a large, you know, detriment to the film, I was more kind of just waiting to see what was going on, rather than going asking myself, you know, oh, what's going to happen next, waiting to kind of see what I knew was going to pan out. Which felt kind of a detriment to the film. And I think if it maybe got its shit together a bit earlier and we kind of had a bit more plot going on, but I think we just left the kind of thing, you know, what's going on, I don't understand what's happening. And for me, it wasn't strong enough to kind of sit with it and wait for those questions to be answered.
Hmm. Yeah, all valid points, although I don't see it that way because I was totally on board with even the senseless nature of it, even though we don't get like the full picture until later, as you say, but even the senseless nature of just attacking innocents left and right in this kind of visual package too. It doesn't speak to me, but I get I get involved in it. You know, I'm kind of a sucker for pessimism in movies too. I get not a kick out of it, but I don't mind it. You know, I think it can be refreshing to be slapped around in movies every now and again.
Well, you need those experiences every now and again. Just for me, this just wasn't that kind of type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
With the violence in here and there, did but the overall kind of, you know, overarching feel of the film, it didn't hit me in that way.
Mm-hmm. And also the setup is one I'm weak for. That two, largely like two actor in a house type of setup. I love that kind of setup. I love the challenge of that. I mean, maybe the movie is more like 70% in the house and the rest being the rest, obviously. So I'm weak for that as well. But I think once upon a time in my review, I hinted at the fact that I think it's a commentary on the threat from the mainland. It's made in 1997. Now the mainland is coming in and destroying Hong Kong. And then again, it's to me, after all is said and done, though, it really, you can find that if you like, but it's really not the main purpose in my mind to comment on the danger of the mainland. It is just evil coming into Hong Kong to wreak havoc, you know. They just happen to be unredeemable characters from the mainland. Yeah. I mean, it's a very obvious setup. You can't read into that, but it doesn't occupy the movie, that commentary. It's just evil in general. It's not deeper than that, but I think it still works. And I think it's more. I think it's scarier too, that pure evil. And also, I think therefore I'm bored with that kind of sort of unclear setup and intent. That is just so purely evil, and it's much thanks to her in my mind. I'm so on board with her choice, and it becomes really kind of heartbreaking by the end for Wayne Lai's character without revealing anything. But he starts out as a prick, you know. He has no high view of prostitutes. You know, he don't want to pay much for their bodies. He just wants their bodies. You know, he doesn't want love, and he's very verbal about that fact. You know, he's just gonna buy them for the night, and he takes, you know, takes them home in his taxi. It's probably raining, and there's lots of strong blacks and blues, and you got that foreboding mood because he's dubious too. You know, he is acting pretty much like a psychopath in the making, you know, once he takes them up to his house, you know, his isolated house. You know, I was reminded of the setting in The Chaser, the Korean movie The Chaser, that isolated house and the stairs and all of that. So,
yeah.
And he even says at one point, you know, let me seal your mouth, essentially, like asking her to shut up. You know, he's got an edge in him. But then Jacqueline Wu pops into frame, you know, and I love how Zhang Kanjiang and, of course, the DOP catches her eyes in, like, when doors are about to close, when doors open, when you see those eyes pop into frame, you know, whoa. Yeah. there's an unease here watching her. And having said that she's a kind of a murderer that isn't perfect all throughout, she cripples him pretty fucking perfectly. Driving over him, not once, but twice.
Oh, she comes back for more. That was kind of something that struck me as well, as how calculated that whole move was as well. That you'd think that something would happen between those two characters when they first meet, but no, it happens a bit later.
Yeah, she's mapped out what she assumes is not his first time picking up prostitutes in the same way, walking to his car, he's parking his car at the same exact spot and walking back to it the same every time. You know, she's right to assume that. I mean, it might have been a long shot, but she's right to assume that. Yep. And shit's on when she runs him over, and it's a pretty hard scene to look at especially when you see the aftermath of him lying on the street, you know, having both his legs broken and presumably crippled. They don't. It seems like he's only broken his legs, but obviously he's in a wheelchair. Boy, oh boy! then he's under her spell. And I wanted to hear a thought on Wayne Lai as a method actor, because it's undeniable that he's, you know, I don't think he's a victim of, you know, a hard director. I think he was on board with being quite hard, you know, harshly and hardly taped to the chair, and being under plastic as well, probably not breathing very comfortably. So what do you think of his method acting, if you will?
Yeah, I was another kind of element I was quite surprised by was, it's not like he's involved in this violence and the violence happens from, you know, in a split second, and in terms of an actor's kind of position, you have to be involved with the scene, scene's done. He was more in numerous scenes, had to be involved with violence. It's very much like a Misery type situation. That he had to be involved with numerous scenes where he had to kind of be involved with this violence.
The entire performance looks exhausting.
He looks tired and tiring. Obviously, the moments where he's kind of crawling and he looks, you know, very tired. He looks like a guy who's definitely took his role seriously, and the amount of kind of stuff he had to go through for the role is quite, you know, flabbergasting, because there's lots of moments where you'd think, I wouldn't want to be in that position, to be honest. Or there's no hope for the guy in terms of what he's put under, but still manages to kind of endure more pain. Mm-hmm. So it's very, yeah, I mean, again, as I say, the violence and the brutality is very affecting. I just think everything else around it and the narrative itself didn't strike me enough to be part of that violence. Mm-hmm.
And you got to, by the way, credit action director Yoon Boon here, because he stages some really crucial murderous actions, you know, messy. And I mean, this is action directing, the way you know they thrash about on the floor, you know, in pools of blood and shit like that. You know, I think it's very not super finely staged action, because you can't, you know, stage it, you know, exactly the same every time. You know, in the way the murders are set up, they are messy murders. But I think Yoon Boon's contribution should be thought of in that regard. That he was there to make sure the various murders and stabbings came off as effective as they did. You know, for instance, the screwdriver stabbing. And I won't reveal any more details about that, but there's a great shot of this quick shot of the screwdriver piercing a hand, but and you notice that amidst the chaos you extract that moment, you know, whoa.
Yep.
And then there's the pools of blood after that, and later on the body that is left over after that massacre is drained of blood in the bathtub. You know, that's just harsh stuff when she cuts open the neck and psh,
Yeah, no.
I mean, it's effective stuff, you know. And all throughout, I think for me, Tsang, director Tsang, has full control of the intercutting of events. I mean, it's very clear. There's a ticking clock here, and without spoiling anything, that there is a sense of, as we hinted at, that she's not a perfect calculated killer. She there are dents made in her armor, and that comes mainly in the form of the innocence, and in this case the children. The children makes kind of a dent in her, but it's not like they take an expected route script wise despite. Without spoiling anything, I would just say that the daughter of Wayne Lai's character is the kid in this movie, obviously, it sets in motion a plot strand that makes you question if she's at all capable of going all the way.
Yeah, which plays into part, which kind of, don't spoil anything, but it doesn't play out kind of how you'd think it would play out. It completely goes kind of in an opposite way.
And there are scenes here that would, you know, are entirely questionable as fiction. But I will also say this: I don't think at all times the kid was safe.
I mean the child actor, he went through some shit. Yeah,
I mean this is a 7 or 8 year old girl that they
yes
they you know they take her for a ride. I won't say anything else. They take her for a ride, and you will know that by the end of the movie.
Do you know what I just thought? She goes for a ride quite similar to the ride that the characters go in our previous film. Think about it, that's true.
Johnny Toe and White Calfire were obsessed with something for 2 minutes maybe.
Something but she goes through some shit, and there are some real kind of horrible moments where she's kind of put under a bit of physicality, and it's tough, man. It's tough stuff. So
it's mainly what made my stomach turn, the way the developments in the script in regards to the kid, you know, it's what made me uncomfortable, because it also looks a bit too real, to be honest. It's not a snuff movie or anything, this listeners, but it wouldn't be done that way in a Hollywood movie, because they have restrictions that Hong Kong movies do not.
Yes.
Including, I guess, having parents on set, and in this case, if the parents were on set, then damn you.
they were at home in bed, mate.
money, Johnny Toe's money. well, Milkway weren't that profitable, but speaking of family, I mean, there's a again, it's a non-spoiler review, so I won't reveal too much, but there is a fine dramatic scene involving Wayne Lai, where it kind of, in strapped to the chair, you know, he realizes how he has not been there for his family. You know, this is a broken family he's not part of anymore. There's a neglect here, and there's that realization in the face of danger. And it's a really heartfelt confession by Wayne Lai that it's hard not to be affected by that, and especially since it's just tied down, you know, he's acting tied down and lying down as well. And I really remember that from the movie. And it's one of those scenes where you just push the camera in a little bit slowly and let the actor get his space and do his thing, rather than just do a 360. And Jacqueline Wu is in the scene as well, and the character is clearly not comfortable listening to someone spilling his humanity.
Yeah, it's a strange moment. It almost, again, not expected, or you wouldn't think he'd share that moment with her, but he does, which is very, very strange. Yeah.
But going back a little bit to that I thought at one point, or some reviewers think that there is a commentary here about the mainland China and the threat from mainland China. Do you at all see that, do you see it and don't really care?
You could turn around and say it is, but there's nothing, you know, overtly, apart from the fact she's from there and she comes, and it's, yeah, I mean, I think it's clutching at straws, to be honest, to put that link with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, you could say it fits, you could say it, you know, but you could say that probably about a lot of films from the time, you know, they kind of, did he possibly know that, you know, he was saying that, or that people would interpret as that, you know, possibly, but I don't think it's in your face, or it's anything that, you know, qualifies the film to be part of, you know, handover or post-handover talk.
Mm-hmm. So we'll keep it short. Obviously, we won't reveal any beats about the ending, but I really wish that Tsang would have more darkness in him, even as a writer, because based on this, for me, and Nobody's Hero, which you did like, you know, both scripts were, you know, in the case of Nobody's Hero, that was fine material that inspired the filmmaking. And inspired everyone, and for me, obviously not for you totally, I feel the same here, that it infuses the production, the effort, and really, it's I said stomach turning, it's torture watching it all through them, because it's not comfortable at all, and it has so little to do with gore, and just with what happens on the screen, the actions, which, you know.
you talk about, you know, torture porn and stuff. My, you know, this is more affecting to me than sitting through a hostel or something like that, mm-hmm. a hostel film, because it's just brutal, just kind of physicality to it. There's no gore or kind of, you know, anything to it. It's more hard hitting, and that's got to be commended as well for capturing that. But yeah, just to know on what you said about the, you know, nobody's hero. If to compare them, they're quite similar in terms of they have. There's no light. It's much, you know, a story kind of wrapped in darkness and dark outcomes and dark kind of events. But I love that film, and just, I think my problem with it comparing the two is that I don't feel anything for the characters here as I did with the previous film, and maybe it's because I couldn't latch on to the fact that to their plot or really didn't understand their plot or couldn't, you know, catch on to, you know, Wayne Law's character either, because I thought that he had, you know, moments of really great dialogue and moments of kind of, you know, very touching kind of, you know, human moments. But as a character, I didn't really see him as someone that need to be spared or someone that I should be kind of thinking, you know, he needs to live. Or maybe that's, you know, and I can't quite put my finger on why. And I think that's maybe where the film kind of polarizes people. I think if you can latch onto the characters, I think you have the same experience as Ken did.
Because for me, I personally can. But I am in no position, because it's not right in any way, to argue against what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because I believe in it a lot, but not to that internet degree. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, yeah. I just say I was so happy to see Lam Suet show up at the end.
He was up. In the early days and would develop into a bit player to given his own vehicle essentially at Milky Way eventually, mainly with PTU.
I mean, I don't want to talk about what happens at the end, but
no.
Did you feel it was a good ending, and were you happy with the ending? Did it kind of come full circle for you in terms of the film itself?
Full circle is hard to ask. I was happy with the ending is also wrong to say, but I didn't have a problem with the ending actually. It's just overall I have no problems with the movie really, so I guess that's the easy answer for me. It's clear from the beginning that there will be no standard and simple and light solutions.
In this movie
and that's, and I just like overall the relentless darkness of the movie, and I can latch on to Wayne Light's characters and the characters with you know, with Wu Chi-Lien character and the Moses Chan character, they're all, you know, pitch black. Everyone else has some light in them, and I can latch on to that. You know, they have some humanity in them, and these two definitely doesn't, even though she shows 0.00001%. Sympathy at some point, but not really.
Yeah, I mean, I think I personally wanted to kind of feel like I'd been on a journey or had accomplished something, and I didn't really feel that. Maybe that was asking a lot from the film, but I kind of felt like I wanted to kind of be, you know, I got somewhere with it, or I felt we were at a different level from where we began. I didn't feel that. I mean, it's a very bleak ending, let's just say.
That, you know, and it's also structured in that way, by the way, that it's kind of also meant to polarize, I think.
Polarize, yeah, that's great. Because they are
not making any excuses. They are,
no.
It's a pessimistic script, and that's all there is to it, you know. And it was supported that pessimism, definitely.
Oh yeah, I mean the end had the film's back, as to say, with kind of keeping the tone, you know, keeping kind of tonal.
By the way, pardon me. I think if I would put forth a theory about something that might have differed from the script, I wouldn't be surprised if reproduction changed a little bit during the very end. China type of ending or anything, but I think possibly Tsang Kang-cheung wrote an even bleak ending.
I kind of got that feeling as well. It kind of feels, yeah, it was, it, yeah, I can't quite explain it. it felt like the tone was there, but it didn't feel completely natural to what had gone before, if you know what I mean. Which you might feel, but yeah, I don't want to say anymore as to spoil it, but
yeah, we'll probably we want to talk if we want to talk more, we have to go into spoilers, and for this review, I don't think we should. So we'll end it right there. I just have some minor sporadic notes. We talked about Yuen Boon's action, and Yuen Boon actually appears in the movie. He plays the husband of the real the prostitute that Wu Qian Lian kills at the beginning of the film. So he's waiting at the border throughout the movie. Yeah. So
I did like his character and like what he did to speak on the characters. Just I completely forgot about his character. Completely, I did like his character and what he did and the part he played, even though it was brief and minor.
It's one of those things like you're on the production and be in it. So,
yeah, be in it. It's not like you've got 1,001 things to do. Just jump on a screen.
And I always have a problem with these kind of scenes in movies, and including in this one because I'm a dog person. I don't like dogs being killed, even when it's. I obviously don't like it when it's done for real, which is unfortunately what happens in certain movies around the world. But obviously, for even if it's faked, I don't like dogs being killed on screen because I'm a dog person, and that happens at the beginning of the film where Wu Qian Lian kills Wayne Lai's dog.
We get dogs and kids in this. Violence towards both.
Yeah.
So it's hardcore. You know, it goes to places that a lot of films don't go to.
So it's the only time where I like. I think it was a German Shepherd as well, and I love German Shepherds.
They're the best dogs as well.
I know. So I'm always uncomfortable with that kind of stuff. I did like the score. It had like those lovely stings of piano. You know, very classic horror. You know, ding.
Yeah. Not very memorable, but I remember the instrument being played. I don't remember certain things, but I'd say it's just part of that. It's got more of a old school horror vibe than it has a kind of splattery kind of. Do you know what I mean? Like more of a, you know, kind of haunted house kind of vibe as opposed to torture.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is another thing to kind of commend about the film. So I'm trying to put praise on it, Ken. I can't completely jump on board with you.
I'm not saying you should change your view, for fuck's sake. So don't
change your mind.
You're in the presence of Ken, so you must agree upon everything he says. It's healthy these kind of things, Tom, it's healthy these kind of things that we do this over the internet, but we are not arguing different opinions, because how can different opinions be argued against one another, if you will? You know, who am I to say that I am right? Who are you to say that you are right? You know, and I think neither of us are. Also, if you look at it, we're probably both wrong.
Yeah,
we could be wrong as well.
David's right.
Yeah, David, of course, he's always on point. Again, this is an uncut version. It was cut for category 3 rating in Hong Kong, and mainly the inserts is you know, a prime example of stuff that was cut. You know, we get the insert to when the prostitute is being strangled at the beginning. You know, mainly like violent inserts are like points where the Hong Kong censors usually go, and they did in this case as well, according to information I read. So it's good to have an uncut version out there. And in terms of availability, I mean, it was on Hong Kong VHS and Laserdisc and VCD, all full frame, subtitled, cut. Tai Seng released a VHS in the US, but it is reported as a bootleg, actually. So, but it's the same specs as the Hong Kong release. But we did get eventually a few years ago an uncut German DVD, letterboxed and subtitled in English. And I think you're snickering because you want to mention a subtitle. But let me run through the board.
No, that was a cough, but you can mention.
Okay, sounded like a snicker, but I'll you'll get to mention that. But the uncut DVD in Germany has been issued several times and should be fairly easy to get from German Amazon. It was even released as a bonus film on the German subtitled and uncut Run and Kill. You know, talk about a great double bill.
Double bill, man. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, so they released a dual layer DVD that featured Intruder as a bonus film. And the subtitles are, you know, perfectly fine. They're cleaned up, it seems. And I mean, it was, I think it was always a pretty solid translation, but I think there's one moment that feels a bit awkward in terms of how they word it in the subtitles, and you put up a screen cap on Facebook, so I'll let you explain the moment, and it's not a spoiler moment, so you can probably explain that.
I'm going to do my best acting performance, okay? Just give me 2 seconds to kind of get into the...
Strap yourself to the chair, okay? Tape around you.
Okay, imagine I'm on a toilet right now. I know it's a lovely sight for everyone. Just imagine that, okay? I fail to excrete.
Oh. That's the subtitle, indeed.
There we are. There we are. New Addy and me. There we are. Yeah. So that was. That gave me a few cheeky moments of giggles there. That one did.
Yeah, Wayne Lai after a while needs to go to the bathroom, and Wu Qianlian isn't letting him take a shit by himself. You know, so he's sitting there. In a very pathetic manner, and says those very words. So
he doesn't look happy.
No, not at all. And as much as I would like to be in the presence of Wu Qianlian, I still vote for privacy on the toilet. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind if I had to pick anyone to look at me. Well, that's not the conversation we're having, is it?
Alrighty.
It's getting dark. Let's move on.
So in terms of the continuation of the Milky Way treasures, you know, this was a treasure for me, a bit of a dud for you, but we are still going to continue looking at the early Milky Way stuff, you know, maybe till the end of the 90s, because the end of the 90s still held interesting stuff. And even though it might not follow the release timeline, if you will, I want to look at The Odd One Dies next, which is Patrick Yao's first movie, and probably one of his most... It's a different movie from Expect the Unexpected, The Longest Night, and Where a Good Man Goes.
Yep.
And by the way, I'm saying Where a Good Man Goes, I think that Johnny Toe's... How is it? What is it? Let me look it up. Because I read that Johnny Toe, as he took over that movie fully, but the reason I'm unsure is I'm thinking that possibly it is, after all is said and done, a Johnny Toe credited movie. So here we go. Yeah, it is. So but I heard that Patrick Yao started that movie and then he left for whatever reason. So but my point is, The Odd One Dies is very different to Expect the Unexpected and The Longest Night. So so it feels like maybe that was one of the truest, maybe, Patrick Yao movies at Milky Way. But we'll get to see that, because I think we are out of our minds if we don't cover Expect the Unexpected and The Longest Night, because they are still fantastic movies,
yep,
regardless who actually directed the most of them. So,
yep.
And it's not that Johnny Toe is a hack, you know, a hack stepping in, you know, anything like that. It's just that he's a very hands-on producer, and he's the co-creator of the company, and
we don't know what happened.
Exactly. We will probably never know. But based on the evidence in them, the feel in them, especially The Longest Night, it's...
Well, you never know whether Toe, you know, he might have been contracted to only do a certain amount of films a year or so. Yeah, we don't know that.
True. Since
you know, he might have had to direct it and, you know, put Patrick's, you know, name on it. We don't know.
Exactly. It's
only for us to speculate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my point, also. I'm merely speculating, but it's not impossible that the behind-the-scenes drama happened the way it's rumored. Yep. But next time, The Odd One Dies. Have you seen The Odd One Dies?
I have not seen The Odd One Dies, so I'm looking forward to it immensely.
It's what I remember is I liked it, but I don't know how I would feel about it. I think it was a bit more arty than I was expecting at the time, but I liked it at the time. It was also quirky, I believe, I remember. So that dry, quirky Johnny Toe-esque humor that you saw in Johnny Toe movies too. So no wonder, you know, he is the producer on it, so he was probably on the production and looking at it and
making sure. Quirky.
Being quirky, indeed. Starring Takeshi Kaneshiro, Carmen Lee, and among other people. So we'll look at that. That's a 1997 movie as well. So we're not into 98 yet. I think there are 97 movies to cover, such as Too Many Ways to Be Number One and Hero Never Dies too. So we're not quite into 98 yet. So all those are gems. Some of them,
gems,
anyway.
Gem. Well, yeah. Let's. Yeah. I think this early on, they're really starting to get into the groove kind of this year and the next couple of years. For my money's worth.
Absolutely, I agree. Alrighty, that is us done for this episode. So the contact information again, then we'll sign off. This has been Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. Podcastonfire.com is the website for all the shows. Podcastonfire@googlemail.com is the email for feedback. The old forum is located at podcastonfire.com/forum. Members only archive is there for those who have registered before, but whenever we post new stuff, it's in the bonus episodes on the website, only on podcastonfire.com, not on iTunes, not on Stitcher. Facebook.com/POF Network is our page, so give us a like and some feedback there, but you can also give us feedback more easily, I think, in the discussion group that you can reach by typing in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search bar and join the discussion. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. Check out my reviews, posted bi-weekly, sogoodreviews.com and selisakvideo.com. Might be a Category 3 movie, a Taiwanese movie, an IFD ninja movie, or an IFD movie that happened to be a Taiwanese movie, actually, that they just dubbed.
It might be German Arthouse. Who knows? On that crazy website.
Well, I think the German Arthouse belongs more to variedcelluloid.net, you know, I'm thinking Necromantic. That as disgusting as Necromantic is, it's pretty much Arthouse too, so.
That so, guy's all over the place. You don't want to see that website. It's all there. Over the place. it's genre defined, too many genres on there. I want to go somewhere where I know I'm going to get one genre.
And where you're gonna go?
Nowhere.
And yep, those are my two websites. Biweekly update: twitter.com/sogoodreviews is where you can follow all my nonsense too, my varied genres that Tom doesn't approve of. And but approve of us on iTunes, of course. You can follow us on iTunes and download and subscribe to the entire Podcast on Fire Network. And leave us a rating and a comment if you like the show. That would very much be appreciated. And stream us on Stitcher if you prefer your podcasts delivered that way. Stitcher.com, you can download that application to your computer. And the application is available for all the common smartphones and tablets out there. Once you're in Stitcher, type in Podcast on Fire Network and each show can be added individually. And Tom KW has a pretty nicely sized review archive on vcinemashow.com.
That's only the ladies, Ken.
I mean, yes, 10, 12 reviews on there, man, so don't sell yourself short. So. Yeah, well,
never do, Ken. it's coming on strong. I'm happy with it and be getting some nice feedback, so it's cool, man. Real cool.
Very cool. And at the time of recording, latest review is Little Big Soldier. So you'll be able to reach that in the show post link to Tom's archive at thecinemashow.com. So check it out. And we are out there, therefore. So this has been Kenny B for this week's Milky Way Treasures. So Tom KW was here as well. The Sourpuss, Tom KW. But I like him anyway.
Good night and goodbye.
Bye-bye.